everyone, I'm Maria Palumbo, CEO of Junction. Through housing and services, we support thousands of South Australians each year. We create opportunities for independence to help people not just survive, but thrive in life. This podcast is dedicated to the inspiring, strong and resilient South Australians we work with every day. This is Growing Strong. Hi everyone, I'm really excited today because we're going to be speaking to Marie and Beck all the way from Kangaroo Island, and their story is fabulous. And we're based today in the south, we're in Christie's Beach, right on Beach Road. So you'll probably hear a bit of noise and traffic that's right in front of us. But this is going to be an awesome conversation. I'm really excited for you to share it with us. You know, when you look back at 2020, everyone immediately goes to COVID. But the truth is, we had it start with a bushfire that was unbelievably sweeping through our hills and Kangaroo Island, and most devastating of all, we had two lives that were lost on the little island community. For those of you who don't know, Junction manages two community centres in South Australia, one at Hackham and the other in Kingscote on KI, and they're really great thriving hubs of connection and support for locals. Both are punching well above their weight in terms of what they mean for their communities and the people in those communities, people who use the centres. The volunteers there have just as fascinating stories as the people that come in, which is a beautiful part of it all. So, Marie and Beck, welcome. Come over from the island on a lovely day. So I might start with you, Marie, and just talk to us about Kangaroo Island, what it means to you, the island itself, because you're a local and I know your heart's right there, and the centre also, what the centre means for you and also the community.
Well, I've been living on Kangaroo Island now for coming up 10 years, and it's a place that I've chose to be my home. And when I first arrived on the island, I started off as volunteering actually at a youth service and became a youth worker, which is my background. From that, I then went to work for council, which was in a community engagement role, which gave me a real opportunity to learn about the island, meet the people, and, you know, find out all those fascinating little cohorts that we have everywhere. After leaving council, I went to work for Junction and opened up their community centre. In 2013-14, Junction approached Department of Human Services, which at the time was DCSI, around the recognised the need of a bit of a community hub. So it was, the island was full of local services, but we also had a lot of fly-in, fly-outs. The issue with the fly-in, fly-outs is services is that they didn't really have anywhere to sit and they had no connection to community. So Junction really looked at this and said, actually, we need to create a space where services can come, be part of the network of the community, and but also connecting into local services. So part of that role of being a community development officer was around creating a hub. And the difference with my role is that every single person on living on the island is the person that I work with. And primarily my role is around social connectedness. So it's around bringing people together, meeting other people, learning new things and making friends.
You know, it's funny, with a small community like KI, people would say, you know, but that's what small communities already do, you know. They've got their footy clubs, they've got their sports clubs, you know, they've got their health services. What more do they need, you know? And I remember a few people saying, I don't understand why we need a centre. But it's about diversity, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, the big thing that surprised that a lot of people get when they go to KI is how large it is. Mm. People think it's like Hamilton Island and we all drive around in golf carts. But it's not. We've got lots of little pockets, we've got lots of little towns, and with no public transport, people can't actually get together and meet. And I think when we talk about the bushfires, that was probably a really interesting space because we had all these pockets of really isolated communities and isolated people. A lot of people will actually move to KI because they actually want to live off the grid. they don't want to see anybody. And I think things like bushfires and COVID-19 have actually made these people really exposed, which is causing, you know, some real issues.
Oh, look, absolutely. And the centre has taken a while to really become part of the community, and I think mainly it's because it's driven by community-minded people like yourself, and I think everyone involved in the centre is so community-minded, which is what makes it work as well. And also we have Beck here, who's just, you haven't been long with us, but you have been around for a long time when it comes to KI and that kind of work as well. And Beck, you, when we talk about those fires, I know you were telling us a story about your own personal experience of it that had the hairs on my arms completely risen. It was really hard to hear, to be honest. And I think, you know, people look at fires from afar and just, you know, think they're horrific, but it's being in it.
Yeah, it was. It was. I wasn't right in it, but my family were right in it. My family farm burnt down to the ground on the 3rd of January. My dad and my two brothers were in the house trying to save the house. They didn't. The whole farm and the house went up. We actually didn't know if they were still alive for about an hour. We knew they were in there, and then the phone tower got burnt down, so we had no idea.
And we saw the that was the footage.
Yeah,
that people saw of the two guys in the house that went viral, I think.
Yeah, it did.
So that, yeah, when people saw that, it's like when you really could go, oh my God, yeah. They were in that home.
And they knew what they were doing as well, which is the scary thing. There were so many stories like that, people who knew what they were doing. Like my dad's been in the CFS for 50 years or more. My brothers, we've all grown up with fire. We know about fire. We know how to stay safe in fire. It's not people trying to fight a fire with a bare feet and a garden hose. Like proper equipment, proper knowledge. And that night, I'm surprised that 20 or 30 people weren't killed in our community. I've heard so many close calls, and that is what... I think that's what keeps people going. It's knowing how much worse that could have been. We lost two lives that night, but it could have been closer to 50. It's incredible how fast that fire moved and how hot it was and how unusual it was for a place that has fire every year. But it was pretty much 5 or 6 weeks of constantly living on edge, wondering who was going to get taken out next, because the wind would change, that someone would be safe, but then the other side of the island was under threat. So living on edge for pretty much 6 weeks, not knowing who was going to get taken out next. It was horrific. And I did actually, pretty much my first full week at Junction was the Monday after that Friday night from hell. And I was obviously pretty emotional. I'd almost lost my dad and my brothers and lost the place where I grew up.
So you've just been through this experience. And talk to me about, at that point, you've lost contact with your dad and your brother. You're sitting at your place. You know that it's coming towards you and you don't know what's happened to your dad and brother.
It was still a long way. We were in Kingscote. I was actually at my stepmum's place with my sister-in-law, my partner, my daughter, who didn't know where her father was, as well. They were all down the West End. We knew they were. We couldn't get hold of anyone. The towers were down. My daughter's 14. She was sitting in the chair, just white and silent. I knew our farm had burnt to the ground. We'd been told by some CFS guys on the other side of the fire that's just gone through the farm. We thought they were done and couldn't get hold of anyone about. Probably, I reckon, close to an hour later, one of my brothers called on my other brother's phone. And my sister-in-law answered, "Oh, Brenton, where's Ben?" And he said, "It is Ben. My phone got burnt. I'm on Brenton's phone. We're all right. We're heading. We're coming in. We're all right. We lost the house." And
But I knew they were safe. I started trying to find my daughter's father because he lives at Vivon Bay, which was directly in line of the fire. So I rang his home phone. It's rung out. Dean, where are you? Rung his mobile. It's run out. And then rang his mate across the road. Oh, hello. I was like, Nath, where are you? Where's Dean? Oh, I'm in Cobby's house. I can't believe we just... The fire just went through. I can't believe we didn't die. And he said, I can't believe we're not dead. I talked to Dean an hour ago. I just rang him and said, get the hell out of there. We just about got killed. Get out of there, Dean. And I tried him again. Couldn't... he said, I think he listened to me. I think he's gone. Couldn't get hold of him. Rang... a bit later, his mobile was out of range. I thought, right, he's on his way to Kingscote. I said, I think he's all right. It's all right, Jimmy. He's on his way to Kingscote. His phone's gone out of range. He must be heading in. And then tried him again. She's a mess. Again, Dad's gone. I rang him again about 15 minutes later. He's like, what? I said, where are you? He said, I'm following your dad into Kingscote. So my dad has called in because my brother has a house at Vivon, my other brother. They've called in there to grab some meat out the freezer because I thought the house was going to burn down, so you've got to get the half a sheep. So I've got to fill up the esky. Mm. And my dad's seen Dean's lights on and called in, Dean, what are you doing? Hard enough, I should leave. Dean, the farm just burnt down. We couldn't save that. You can't save this. Get out of here. So no. They've all convoyed in to Kingscote.
Longest hour of your life.
Oh, it was hell. Mm. And got hold of... talk to him. Oh, I'm following your dad. I'm on the way. I was like, he's all right. He's on his way. And she's like, burst into tears because, yeah, it was horrific not knowing. And then until 3 o'clock in the morning, it was coming for us. I went home and started packing my van and packing the house, and we've got cats and dogs.
Mm.
And because Dad had been out amongst it, I was like, are we all right to stay here tonight, Dad? And he's, because we're about 5 minutes away. He said, yep, keep your phone on, I'll ring you if you need to. Stay there with your cats and dogs, get ready to grab them. Because Kingscote was pretty much the only safe place. I stayed up till 3 a.m. until the wind changed.
Mm.
And then I thought, oh, we're right. And there was a big red glow in the sky. There was ash falling on the house. I was getting a sore throat from the smoke in the air. It was horrible. Waiting. It was horrific. Just waiting. And then, you know, and then until, I think we had a large amount of rain on about the 1st of Feb. Until then, we didn't know when that fire was going to turn. Come back and head for us again. And it did that for those next 3 or 4 weeks. It just someone was always under threat. And someone was living on edge all the time.
The way you describe it is really hard to listen to. And I still can't imagine those feelings that you had being in that situation.
Yeah.
I try to sort of put myself there and I just, yeah, I couldn't imagine. So from that, going through that, you started a brand new job with us.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
Which I thank my lucky stars for every day.
But still, because the thing is, even if you were starting a brand new job, that's hard enough, but you were going into... a crisis that the island had never seen before. So it was literally hands on deck, we're in crisis, and the centre's sort of at the centre of the coordination of that. And so you're dealing with your own experiences and trauma and laying awake at night going, what if and what's coming next? And then turning up to the next day and dealing with everyone else's crisis. Like that's pretty incredible.
And it was such a shared crisis, though, because that was my community, my sports club, you know. It pretty much everyone who walked in the door, it was like, oh, how are you going? Because everyone was in the same boat.
Mm.
It was horrific. But, yeah, it was a very shared horror, too, which I think helped.
Mm.
And also knowing how much more horrific it could have been. But it was very hard sitting down with people and hearing their close calls and their story of their loss and dealing with your own emotions, and people I've known all my life telling me how close they came to losing their lives. And
mm.
So, yeah, it was a It was very emotional, not your average day at the office, for sure. And I didn't work every day. I'd sometimes ring Deb and say, I'm losing it, I need to go home.
Yeah,
and
course.
Yeah, which is why I say I thank my lucky stars I'd started a new job with Junction, who obviously cared about how I was coping with that, because it wasn't easy. Mm. But I felt so supported through that. I don't think I could have done it without that support.
But also in the midst of not knowing when it was going to fire up again.
Yeah.
You know, so you've got the anxiety of that unknown.
Yeah.
Trying to work through the trauma of what you actually went through, and then having that kind of overwhelming sense of needing to coordinate everyone's needs, yeah, who are coming to try and seek similar support. And even, as you say, maybe they didn't even need anything. They just needed to connect to someone else to share the...
Yeah.
To share that connection of the same trauma, so they weren't feeling alone in it too. Yeah. Sometimes that's all people were seeking.
Yeah. Well, they didn't know what they wanted even, because it was such a... People didn't know what they needed. It's such an unusual thing to have to deal with,
yeah,
that level of devastation. So the relief centre would send people up to us to see if there's anything we could do for them.
Yeah.
But it was... And we also, the phone ran hot, the phones. We had about 3 or 4 lines just ringing all day.
Yeah.
People are very generous and well-meaning, but constantly, we want to come and help.
What can we do?
And
I remember making one of those phone calls. I might have got Marie or somebody, and I said, what can we do? And she said, just leave us alone.
Yeah, actually.
Nicely. But I get exactly what you were saying. It was overwhelming. People's help in that time, as well-meaning as it is not comprehending the need to just be and be still and just not be overwhelmed.
It was very overwhelming. And we had so many people coming into the centre also wanting to help. You know, in a few weeks we're going to need help. Right now we're in the middle of a disaster that is still looming on the doorstep. We don't actually need more people here. Stay away. It's dangerous. We don't need more people to have to evacuate.
The community centre became a really interesting space because we had the relief centre, which was set up by SAHA and Red Cross. But people actually, a lot of community came to the community centre because... They used to say we were like this lovely white space that they came into. We were really supportive. We were all locals. It was okay to cry. We would hug each other. And whereas the relief centre was sort of an agency doing a job, and they needed to do that job. But I think the community centre hopefully showed the recovery space that this is the right way to do it, because we just were different. And look, we were there before the fires. We were there for 3-4 years before the fires, and people saw us as a trusted source. And they knew that they could come in and it was okay to just be a person and cry. And we'd cry with them and, you know, it was very emotional. But I think it was really cathartic for a lot of people, as Beck was saying. A lot of people just needed to come in and talk to someone. And I think we really became that role.
And a lot of people didn't make a home for Christmas. I actually had my whole family together for Christmas Day for the first time in years, and it was only at the last minute that my brothers were like, yeah, we're coming, because they'd been helping their mates out. They were like, I'm not leaving my mates to go home for Christmas lunch if it's still a danger, but it was actually not a bad day. So we actually had Christmas, and then after that it was absolute hell for about 5 weeks.
And I think the other thing about running the centre and having that community connection is that rather than be coming from supporting people based on assumption of what we think they need, you were learning what they actually needed. So what we loved is you were able to tell us, you know what people actually need? They actually need fuel. And there's nothing coming through that gives them practical support with fuel. And so we're able to work through getting that support directly to you. And that's what's... The great thing is, it's like everyone wants to help but doesn't really know what their help is. And so you being able to say, look, because we're talking to people all the time, this is what we know, and fuel was a big one.
You're absolutely right, Maria. the interesting thing about bushfires or any emergency is that from a community, our needs were there before the fires. So we knew from a community space what are the things that our community in trauma is needing right now. And we know fuel is always a really contentious issue on the island. We're always at least 50 to 60 cents a litre more expensive than the mainland. And the issue we had is we had so many farmers on farm fighting units out there fighting fires who weren't taking a wage. We had lots of people working and supporting them who weren't taking a wage. We had CFS people out there who at that time, I don't think the government had recognised that to allow them to get a payment. So we had a lot of people spending loads and loads of money on fuel. We had people who'd lost homes who were relying on generators that need fuel. We knew straight away that that was probably one of the biggest things that was going to put stress on many, many families. So that was why when you rang, and I did bring you back, I said, can you just give us a moment to just think about what it is that we needed? And we both agreed, fuel.
Yeah.
And that's where Junction's efforts and what you did around helping us to, you know, helping to fundraise was fantastic. A lot of people who came into the centre really were just looking for support. They won't take support. I don't need help. I don't need help. You hand them a fuel card, and they were so grateful, because that was the thing that was going to really make such an impact and help them just that ever so slightly.
So what's happening now? Tell us where we're at now. As the green shoots came through the blackened earth and things are rejuvenating itself, you know, where is everyone at now, and what do you think is most important going forward?
People are still trying to rebuild, and it's going to take a long time. People are getting their farms back together. They're starting to plan where they might put a house. Some people have started a house. Most people are living in very much temporary accommodation still. Mindaroo have lent a whole heap of pods, they call them, converted shipping containers. So a lot of people have one of those on their farm, which has running water, generator, washing machine, electricity. So that's been really good. People can actually get back, camp on their property and start to rebuild rather than driving
back and forth
for, you know, an hour back and forth each morning and afternoon, which
is a good initiative, the pods, because I think that's so true. You know, if we had housing to give people, but if it was all in Kingscote or only in Penashaw and they lived a long way away, that's as stressful as not having a house. But people probably would have camped before they would have lived like that.
And that's exactly right, Maria. We had a lot of people ring up and offer their holiday accommodation on the east end of the island. Oh, I've got a house at Borden Beach or American River or Penashaw. They can stay as long as they want. No one wanted to. Yeah. Pandana was too far away.
Yeah.
So we actually wanted to be on our land, cleaning up and getting back
to normal.
Back to normal. And so those pods were brilliant. People are now out on their property doing what they need to be doing, not wasting their time travelling and the cost of that. You're right, a lot of people were in tents, caravans, humpies, whatever, sleeping in the back of their van on their property rather than taking up the offer of a free house, you know, 100 k's away, because it's not where people want to be.
You know, the other thing is it's also reflecting that when people have trauma, going back to home or going back to place, even if their home isn't there but it's still their place, I think we all, like, if you think about any time something really, really hard happened to you, you just want to get home. Wherever home is, you just want to get home. And I think having people displaced is the worst, when they just need to be home for whatever that is. So I think that was an amazing initiative as well. So kudos to the what was the company's name again?
Mindaroo. Twiggy Forest's.
Mindaroo.
Twiggy Forest's company.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they use those pods for town camps, don't they?
That's right.
The mining.
So they're on loan for.
Yeah. Right.
So it's allowed people to stay on their land if they wish, and help them with the rebuild process. And, you know, this is where Junction played a really interesting space, because we understand homelessness really well, because realistically that's what this was. We were looking at was a homeless, as you say, displaced people. So, you know, you've got a lot of people on the island who want to try and help them and, you know, move them into nice, pretty little holiday houses. But we understood actually people want to be where they wish to be. And so Junction really helped the recovery space try and understand that they want to do that. What does that look like? Mm. So we allowed them, we supported them around looking around who was very vulnerable, who, because 6 weeks on, there were still people who did not have running toilets, did not have running water. As Beck said, some were just living in the back of their utes. And so we helped the recovery space look at that list of people who had lost their homes and say, look, hang on a sec, we just need to do a welfare check. We just want to check to see that they've got that basic needs. But if they want to live there, then we should allow them to do that because it's their home. But let's help them do it safely.
So tell us about what is happening at the centre. So what is going on? What kind of activities are occurring there? What's the stuff that people are really enjoying when they come along?
We've got lots of great stuff happening at the community centre. We've got a fabulous community garden. We have a wonderful mosaic group that is a women's support group that was built out of a domestic violence support group, which has been going now for nearly 10 years. Mm. We have started a kids club, which we started last year, for kids 8 to 12. We run that on a Thursday, and that's for kids that are actually just running the streets. They come in, we feed them, just touch base with them, and they are now knocking on our door waiting for Kids Club to start, which is fantastic. We are looking at purchasing a community van, and we've spoken to the Lions Club and the Rotary Club, who are really, really keen to come on board and be partners with the community centre with that. The other initiative is Our Town, which was Faith Fuller Foundation. We're looking at a pilot called Our Town, and it's around a 10-year plan, building a community mental health plan with 5 other regional towns around South Australia. We were very lucky to be shortlisted to the 6. Out of that, there was going to be 2 towns shortlisted to win $2 million over 10 years to support the community mental health plan. Faith Fuller have contacted us to say, actually, we believe KI needs the help. We're going to give you the money up front. So the community centre, through Junction, has actually won $3 million to actually support the community on a mental health plan over 10 years.
Tell me about your family now. How they're going?
My brother's good. He's out on the farm, building a farm again.
Yeah.
He's actually been really positive right from the beginning, getting back on with life. Tourism's taken a real whack.
Hit.
My dad, my brother, other brother work in tourism. My dad's a beekeeper. He lost a lot of bees in the fire. They had the Book Them Out campaign after the bushfire, which was really successful. March was really busy on KI, and then Book Them Out turned into Please Go Away, which sort of killed the next really busy period, which is Easter. Those Easter holidays are really busy on KI. No one. So all the tourism businesses lost January, they've lost Easter. And a lot of people on Kangaroo Island have seasonal work. Kangaroo Island actually has not a very high unemployment rate, but there are a lot of people who could probably be on unemployment benefits for half of the year who don't apply. They just work really hard in the summer. They stash it away and then make their way through winter and work really hard in the summer. So a lot of people work like that's how they work. They work really seasonally. So that season didn't happen for a lot of people in hospitality, tourism, farming, shearing. All of those businesses have taken a real hit.
And so then, they are in trouble in the winter.
Yeah, and so you've missed that peak earning time and then go into winter already behind. So we may begin to see some people really struggling, and we have noticed that lately. Yeah. We've had a lot of people accessing emergency relief who just don't know what to do. They don't know how to pay their bills. Well, thankfully, we've got a couple of financial counsellors who work out of the centre. Uniting Communities have been there for a long time, and we have another one from the Salvos who's as a result of the bushfire. And they're in the centre quite often. It's been really good. Someone will come in and access help for some food or a bill. and say, hey, come and talk to this guy. He might be able to help you tweak a few things. That help has been really, really good.
Well, that's good.
So people come in with a pile of envelopes they're too afraid to open.
Yeah,
but and walk out the door a foot taller and smiling, saying, thank you so much. He just saved my life. Like, people not knowing if they should sell their house or... And those guys just get on the phone and
sort it out.
So that sort of practical help is really good. So everyone in South Australia needs to go to KOI.
Yes.
KOI actually has a very low visitation from South Australians. Mm. Most of our tourists from interstate and international. Mm. A lot of South Australians haven't actually been to KOI because you think, okay, I can take the whole family to the Gold Coast or Bali and it's probably, you know, on a par with the cost. So hopefully now people are allowed to go somewhere and they're not allowed to leave the state. Maybe they'll come to KOI.
Marie and Beck, is there any final parting words you have that you'd like those of us listening anywhere to know about KI and just a final message, if you might have one? If not, that's fine.
I would just like to say thank you. Thank you to the mainland for the love that we've received from you. Don't forget about us. And, you know, it's not just about coming over to tourism. We'd love to see, you know, once we can, people come over and do shows, come over and, you know, give the community something really great to attend. So I'd be inviting lots of people over to come over and just, you know, give us some fun.
Yeah, lovely.
It's all about
Yeah, thank you, everyone. Yeah. We did. We got so much love and we had the Fringe come over. It was amazing. So we did. KI has been totally blessed by the amount of love and support we've had in the last few months. It's been incredible. But yeah, we're still there. We're still KI.
Well, you always will be.
A little bit singed around the edges, but...
Yeah, resilience.
Yeah.
Community that's resilient will always be there.